Welcome to episode 41 of Mancy, podcast about magic and how it has influenced our culture. In each set of episodes, we cover a different Mancy or method of magic. I'm RJ Walker. I'm a spoken word artist and writer. With me is my co-host, Elle.
I'm Elle Alder, a professional psychic and solitary eclectic witch.
Last episode, we discussed ectoplasm and notable mediums who used ectoplasm in their acts. Ectoplasm has been universally debunked as being fraudulent, and the last person to ever be charged for witchcraft in the UK was Helen Duncan for her use of ectoplasm and repeatedly being debunked, repeatedly being charged with fraud. We also discussed Ava Carrieri and her bizarre nude ectoplasm medium show. Both mediums were famous for materializing spirits. Ava materialized a 300-year-old Hindu man, for some reason, and Helen was famous for materializing her spirit guide, Peggy. These episodes are all about materialization, essentially giving form to psychic or spiritual energy, ectoplasm being a type of materialization. Elle, have you, like, materialized anything? Have you ever been, like, come forth and, like, given something physical form with your psychic powers?
No.
No.
And I've never heard of anyone who's done that either.
I mean, that would violate the law of thermodynamics, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're going to be leaving the world of mediums and going into the world of Buddhism, cryptids, and deeply obscure internet culture. Like internet subculture. It's like subculture, actually. It's like three layers of
yeah,
subs
it is.
In this culture.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about tulpas, which exist in all three of these categories. We're going to go in and unpack each one. Elle and I did some video research for this, and I want to do a quick preface. I do my best to be an open-minded person, and I just ask the same from you. I've been in and out of various subcultures, and I kind of exist in this subculture space. You have to when you're in Salt Lake City and you're, like, not Mormon and you're an artist. And I actually believe that these subcultures add tremendous value to the human experience. The bronies, the furries, the juggalos, hot dog, and Jack Daniels eating contest notwithstanding. Can there be issues in these communities?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But these issues are the same issues that are in every culture. And I think shitting on these cultures, these subcultures, because they have these issues is punching down compared to, like, you know, huge cultures like Christianity that have these issues on a massive scale that
yeah.
do huge amounts of damage.
Yeah.
You know.
Systematic damage.
Yeah. So yeah. I like to punch up, especially as an atheist and a secular person. I like to punch up at the cultures I see that are actually doing the exploitation and, like, the bigotry and everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you already know about tulpamancy and the subculture around it, I want to assure you that my intention is not to shit on tulpamancers in any way or disrespect their culture. There is a chance I could be wrong about something. Because the thing is that these cultures are amorphous and changing all the time.
Yeah.
The research I've done could be outdated. Or I could have read something from one part of the community that doesn't translate to another part of the community. Because, you know, people aren't a monolith. As always, I'll still be providing my secular lens and Elle will be providing a spiritual one when we're discussing this community. But I want to make it clear we're not just, like, out here to, like, shit on some, like, internet people.
Yeah, and I would have to say, so in the research that we did yesterday, each experience, each video was different from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something to note here is that, and basically the conversation that we had at the beginning of this, like, RJ started talking about it and I was like, no offense, like, I think that you do great research, but I think that what you were trying to say, you do not have the information to understand, like, in terms of, like, vocabulary and understanding this world a little bit more spiritually. And I think that that's something that translates into the other communities, that it's people who are taking something that is inherently incredibly spiritual and then applying it to a secular, or using it secularly, applying mm-hmm. it to a secular experience, having it, using it through a secular lens. And so that means that some of this, if you're listening to this and you're like, well, but that sounds like, don't worry. I told RJ that 20 times. And so we're gonna get through this weird episode with a lot of weird different sections of it together. It's an experience, you guys.
With that said, let's dive into the world of tulpas, materialized thought forms created with psychic, psychological, or spiritual energy. So what the fuck is a tulpa? let's first discuss its origins in Tibetan Buddhism and Indian Buddhism. Keep in mind that Buddhism is a huge fucking religion with many branches and practices. About 7% of the entire global population right now is Buddhist. We don't exactly have time to cover all of Buddhism because it's, you know, also one of those things that people are constantly like evolving and changing and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I strongly recommend that you check out Buddhism on your own. You know, like I'm an atheist, but there's a lot of stuff in Buddhism that I kind of vibe with. Not like everything, but there's some stuff that I vibe with, like on mm-hmm. a philosophical level. And I'm sure there's stuff, Elle, that even as an eclectic witch, you vibe with some of the things
I'm
in
sure,
Buddhism.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about the Hindu Buddhist variety of tulpa. One early text called The Fruit of Contemplated Life, it's a translated name. Hmm. Essentially, the idea is that if you live your life mindfully and scrutinize and understand everything that you're doing, then you will receive rewards, basically, for doing that.
Okay.
Which, like, I'm down. Like, yeah, think about what you're fucking doing.
Yeah.
So this text, The Fruit of Contemplated Life, discusses the ability to create something called a mind-made body. This is believed to be the way Buddha was able to achieve certain miracles, such as creating duplicates of himself, astral projecting, and entering into the continuum of the mind stream. the mind stream being the metaphysical realm where all human thoughts and feelings exist. I'm being reductive, but essentially it's a collective unconscious, except it exists for all time and contains all the thoughts and knowledge of people from past and current lifespans. Basically, Buddha was able to, like, project himself there and enter it, and then return using the power of mind-made body.
Hmm.
Essentially, he could physicalize his thoughts and project his own body in other places or create more of himself.
Okay.
And I'm sure the what the fuck is this comic book sounding place? The continuum of the mind stream. I'm sure that that sounds very familiar to you because it sounds a lot like the Akashic Records.
Yeah, it does. And that's, I would argue, so my general approach to religion and spirituality is it's all the same thing with different names and different like varieties of access points. So, like if you look at all the creation myths are pretty much the same with different names. Jesus, that kind of stuff, all the same, just culturally different names. And so that I generally look at all this stuff as like, yeah, this is the Akashic Records, but it's from that culture. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
In the late 4th century BC, an influential Indian Buddhist philosopher, Vasubandhu, yes, I believe I said that right.
It
at least
sounded right.
At least an Americanized version.
Yeah.
Vasubandhu theorized that a form of energy existed called siddhi. Essentially, siddhi is psychic energy, paranormal energy, magic power. Siddhi could be achieved through dedication to Buddhist teachings and rituals, mostly meditation, self-mindfulness, selflessness, and a commitment to the Eightfold Path, which is like the path to enlightenment.
Mm.
To utilize siddhi, you need extreme discipline. Like, you need to be Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Buddha's doubles are called nirmta. Nirmita, a form of siddhi that is a physical manifestation of one's thoughts. And you need good control of your thoughts in order to do this.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the first tulpa, is the duplicate of Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Asanga, founder of the Yogacara school of Buddhism, describes them as intentional illusion and not having material form. Because
okay.
again, law of thermodynamics, you can't just create something out of nothing.
Yeah.
But it's like an illusion. Of course, now we know that photons are something, and you can't create photons out of nothing. He described it as an illusion.
Okay, yeah, I can get on board. I can get on board with both of those, more so the second than the first, but yes, got it.
Now let's talk about the Tibetan variety, because this is where, like, the Tibetan variety is where most of our idea of, like, tulpas come from. They have a belief in what's called the emanation of body. And, like, their Buddhism is very different than this Hindu Buddhism, and I could, like, go into it and, like, the three bodies of Buddha and, like, the three states. Like, it's a whole deal. Mm-hmm. But that's like a whole religion, and you can study that on your own.
Yeah.
It's like a whole deal. The emanation of body is the body of Buddha as a projection that is designed to teach people. So Buddha is like projecting his body places so that he can like teach people, and then the projection fades. Of course, there's like a lot more to it than that, but it creates the basis we need to talk about tulpas. And it brings us to the 20th century studies of Tibetan Buddhism. Like with many spiritual practices, anthropologists and spiritualists just kind of like showed up and were like, what are your spiritual beliefs? So that I can just record scratch and put my own spin on it. In addition to the organic changes Buddhism already went through after like, you know, 20 fucking centuries. So enter the Theosophists. Someone you're probably fairly familiar with, L. They, you just, like the way you just described where like everything is actually part of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's Theosophy.
Oh, yeah.
So the Theosophists are the ones who established the Akashic Records, which you read from.
Yeah, that's my jam. Yeah. That's my shit. Yeah.
And we'll probably do an episode on just the Theosophists at one point. Likely I'll go into the whole story of like how they formed and like their whole fucking deal. But to summarize, the Theosophists were largely concerned with the idea of an ancient universal religion or an ancient universal spiritualism. Essentially, all religions are just branches off of this singular truth. And the only way to find that singular truth is to follow each branch, every single branch, and just see where they converge. Like, there's a whole deal with like people called the masters who are like enlightened beings connected to the universal religion. And if the masters were anywhere, they would be in Tibet. So obviously Theosophists were like going to Tibet to like find the masters. Also, if you're a Marvel fan, this might sound kind of familiar because this is the basis for Doctor Strange. much of like the mystical side of Marvel is straight up drawn from Theosophy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, it was the Theosophists who took these Buddhist concepts like the Nirmita and adapted them into what they called the Tulpa, which is a bastardization of a Tibetan word that was like sounded like Tulka. But they were like, oh, yeah, Tulpa, because, you know, language barrier.
I had like this guy that I dated briefly. His name was Esan because he's from Iran. And people were like Tucson and they just fucking called him Tucson. Like Esan is so hard to say. Anyway, I am annoyed by this thing that people do. Yeah.
A tulpa being a being that could be manifested or materialized through dedicated mindful intention.
Okay.
A Theosophist named Annie Besant wrote a book called Thought Forms in 1901, where tulpas were defined and placed into three categories. Forms in the shape of a person, in the shape of the person who creates them, so like the duplicates of Buddha. Forms that resemble objects or people that may become ensouled by nature spirits or by the dead. And that was like, you know, another form tulpa could take where you could create a tulpa of somebody who has died or like a nature spirit and you could put it inside something.
Mm-hmm.
And then forms that represent inherent qualities from the astral or mental planes, such as emotions. So when I was trying to be like, hey, El, can you make a tulpa for this episode? You were like, well, I can just draw from like these spiritual sources and like whatever, and then create a tulpa out of multiple.
Yeah.
That's the third kind.
That's the third
that,
kind.
That she's talking about.
Okay. Tell me the first one again, because I can do the second and the third. The first one is just straight up creating it, right?
So the first one is a duplicate of yourself.
Oh, no, I could do all three of those. Yeah.
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 You just create a mind duplicate.
Actually, well, that's what you do. That's what one can do for protection. So, like, when I had the store and we kept getting hit with, like, magic spells and curses and shit, I just created a double, put it, like, on the back part of the property, and then I took all the anchors and ties and, like, put it on that. And that's a tactic that I teach, like, spiritual healers and people who might have a lot of psychic attacks, is to create an energetic double and then have everything that gets sent to you targeted to that. So then you're not getting – that's an active practice that I do.
Yeah, well, like you're a theosophist, actually.
I feel like it could be, yeah. This is where we're at. I had no idea, but perhaps I found my thing.
Well, I think you might have learned from people who subscribe to theosophy. That might have been part of the thing.
Well, I think all of this is so connected. I've never had a teacher that specifically was like, I'm a theosophist. And a lot of what I know, I learn from a lot of different places. Like, I have so many mentors and teachers and people that I've learned things from and picked things up on.
But, I mean, theosophy works with eclecticism because it's like, oh, well, all these things are actually the part of the same thing. I believe the motto of the theosophists is no religion is greater than truth.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I would be on board with that.
Let me look it up.
But this is kind of how I learned tarot. Like, no one taught me tarot. I just knew what all the cards meant.
Yeah, it is. There is no religion higher than truth. And their fucking logo is every goddamn religious symbol that has ever been fucking created, just like smashed into one logo. It's like we've got the fucking Sanskrit, and we've got
the
swastika that goes the other way, and we've got an Ouroboros, and we've got a cross, and we've got an Ankh, and we've got a Star of David, and we have the symbol for alchemy. Like, they're all smashed together.
I probably in a past life was a theosophist, like a pretty hardcore one, and I've just held on to it, and I'm like, I already know this shit, bitches.
Yeah. I think it's worth examining them in their own episode, though.
Yeah, for sure.
So a spiritualist, like, this is another big person that really was like, this is what tulpas are, and created the basis for what we believe tulpas are today. The spiritualist Alexandra David Neal claimed to see tulpas in Tibet while she was traveling there on a journey. And Alexandra is one of those just absolute unit spiritualists, like a Crowley, right? Where she was a Belgian-French woman who was a trained opera singer with an interest in the occult and desire to explore the world. So she just fucking did that. And she was especially interested in Asian religions and philosophies. She was a Buddhist and an anarchist, and her writings would go on to inspire Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg. Other people she directly inspired, famous religious leaders, were Alan Watts and Ram Dass, who popularized yoga and Eastern spiritualism for, like, the whole baby boomer generation. Like, the reason we have yoga in America is probably because of Ram Dass. The reason we have white woman in the park yoga is because of Ram Dass. Let me put it that way.
That's why you can go to Red Rocks and just roll your way down when you fall out of your down dog.
Yeah.
That was an Instagram reel I saw yesterday that I was like, yep, that would be me.
Anyway, in the 1920s, she was on a spiritual journey into Tibet, and she described tulpas as magic formations generated by a powerful concentration of thought. She believed that tulpas could develop minds of their own. Once a tulpa is endowed with enough vitality to be capable of playing the part of a real being, it tends to free itself from its maker's control. This, say Tibetan occultists, happens mechanically, just as a child, when her body is completed and able to live apart from her mother, leaves the womb. She claimed to have created a tulpa herself. She created a jolly-looking monk in the image of Friar Tuck from Robin Hood.
Yes, I'm – like, I think – I'm trying to – I still have had – this whole time, I have had issue with the idea of creating a thing that doesn't exist because I believe that is not possible. And so I am trying to decide in my brain – I'm contemplating whether or not – making a tulpa is so different from birthing a child, but the spirit that is in a child already exists, and the spirit that is in a tulpa already exists. You are just giving it a pathway for it to have life. This is what I'm thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, Topomancers later would say that this is like an entirely new being that comes from you, that is like part of you.
Okay. Yeah.
That is like almost like you split your spirit and then grow a new one in a petri dish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You
know? Later, this Friar Tuck Topa she created developed a mind and life of its own, and she had to destroy it because it became evil.
What is the process of destroying a Topa?
So I'm pretty sure it's just like you erase the thought form. You're just like, you know what? Go away. You're fired because I'm in control. I created you and I can uncreate you. It's like erase.
Yeah. Okay.
So she said herself that her experience might have been an illusion, saying, I may have created my own hallucination.
Mm-hmm.
Though she said others could see and interact with the thought forms that she had created. Her writings on the Topa and thought forms were extremely influential and inspired comics like Batman, who faces a Topa in the famous comic where he teams up with the demon Etrigan, I think it's they took parts of that comic run. It's like an old comic run, and they put it into one of the DC animated movies. That's the one with like Batman and Constantine and Etrigan. Anyway, there's a Topa in there. But probably the most influential piece of media regarding Topas was in the late 90s with a little show called The X-Files.
Mm.
In the X-Files, there are several creatures that are Topas. When they made their debut, they like established them as like a fully materialized entity that could interact with their environment and even fucking kill people. They're similar to golems. So like one used garbage to form its body. So like they don't have bodies, but they can steal matter around them to make a body.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. One of them was called...
See, I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
That I can, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like that's, yeah. I'm down with that.
Yeah. And if you don't know, a golem is from like Jewish mysticism where you can like imbue a spirit into an object or like a artificial body.
A lot of times they're depicted as like creating out of mud, right?
Yeah. Out of mud and like rock.
Mm-hmm.
Or just elements.
Yeah.
So one of these Topas in X-Files was called Band-Aid Nose Man. And he had a Band-Aid that went from like one nostril to the other, covering the bottom of his nose.
Okay.
And he was a Topa that was invented by a homeless man originally as a scary story to deter people from hurting homeless people. He's just like, you better not hurt me or Band-Aid Nose Man will get you. Right? The rumor spread in the show and the concept of Band-Aid Nose Man took on a form and became a Topa. And that kind of established Topas as like a cryptid. It's like part of folklore.
Yeah.
Right? Then... another little show called Supernatural.
Yeah, we didn't even watch the episode.
Yeah, it featured a Topa. And in the Supernatural episode, it's in season one. So, like, I remember. I gave up on Supernatural, like, when it became, like, an all angels and demons show.
Yeah.
My favorite part about Supernatural was, like, oh, we're going to explore all these different folklores. But when it all just became, like, it's just Christianity. I was, like, yeah, kind of bored. Anyway, in Supernatural... one could create a Topa by concentrating on one thing while looking at a Tibetan spirit sigil. Once created, the Topa could take on a life of its own. Because Topas feed on thoughts, they are fueled by legends. The more people think about them, the more powerful and independent they become. So in season one of Supernatural, there's an episode called Hell House. Some teenagers were like, let's draw these spooky sigils inside this abandoned house. And they... took one out of like a theosophy textbook that had like a the actual Tibetan spirit sigil. They put that in the house and then they're like, people are going to think it's haunted. And people go in, see the sigil and be like, it's haunted. And then the Topa would like start to exist because
yeah, continuously putting energy into it.
Right. And then internet rumors started to spread about this house online. And so more people were thinking about it and feeding
so
this
then,
Topa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once the Topa gained power. And if I recall, the way that they took it out was Sam or Dean or whatever the fuck. like started going online to like the wiki and editing it to say that the Tolpa was weak against iron bullets, which is just the weapon they had. They were like, it has weaknesses. So they wrote weaknesses into the legend so that it would manifest these weaknesses in itself.
Oh, okay. That's dope.
But then like the website went down or something because the Tolpa was trying to stop them. And then Sam was like, we just do it the old fashioned way. And they burned down the house.
Yeah, word. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's other Tolpas in the show. I think there's one in season 10, but I don't know if I got that far. Anyway. Yeah. So we have the X-Files and we have Supernatural, both using the lore of Tolpas. And that contributed to the legend that Tolpas were cryptids, thought forms that were made real through collective concentration on them. There are several creepypastas about Tolpas. This is really where they originated, like this online culture originated, was surrounding the creepypastas of Tolpas. It was also like largely believed that Slender Man is a Tolpa.
Yeah.
Like he didn't exist, but because so many people are thinking about him and changing this lore, he becomes real.
Can I say the things I was going to say last night?
Yeah.
Or that I was saying last night? So, because we were trying to like, because I was like, I think this is what a Tolpa is. And RJ was like, I don't think that's what a Tolpa is. And I was like, yeah, but what you're saying is so close to what I think it is that we like, I have to do research to figure this out. And so as we were doing research, someone brought up Slender Man. And RJ was like, I don't think it's a Tolpa. I think it's, again, like an escapism for like mental illness.
Yeah, it's a scapegoat for mental health issues in the youth.
Totally get that. And I was like, I'm not saying that that isn't an issue, but I am saying that the thing that happens with a Tolpa, and this is like, I'm really careful about saying like, I don't pray to God. I don't worship God. I don't have gods and goddesses that I necessarily worship as like greater than me. Like I really view gods and goddesses as tolpas, as things that we give energy to that become real because we believe in them, because we give them energy.
Like American gods. That's how it works in American gods.
And so that's kind of my belief and approach. But there are things like Slender Man, who never existed, but was kind of part of this weird collective unconsciousness or something, or was born via a Photoshop contest in the early 2000s.
Yeah, you can refer to the Cybermancy episode we did last time.
To listen to that.
Hear the story of Slender Man.
So Slender Man, basically, I think is, if there were a true Tolpa now, it would be Slender Man, because people said, this is real. And then people continuously put energy into it. And even though he did not become physical, even though he didn't have a physical form, his impacts were certainly felt in the physical world, which I think is as close to a true Tolpa as we can get.
Yeah.
Well, and I think Buddhism at the time when they were making Tolpas, I'm not saying that that couldn't have been possible then. Different world, different amount of spirituality, different practices, different people that evolve over time. And so that's certainly an argument a lot of people make, that like the power, the magic that we have now is diluted or whatever you choose to believe about it. We definitely live in a different world than people who could have like made the OG Tolpas did. And you can say that for sure.
Yeah. And like that's like the whole basis for American Gods. And part of why I love American Gods, where it's like we're in America and all these people brought their gods with them to America. But because these people were Americanized, the gods were Americanized. And then new things start to pop up, like media is like a god of like the news media that people worship. That's fucking Tucker Carlson people that like fucking worship Tucker Carlson. And just the concept of Fox News, right, becomes a god, becomes a Tolpa that just lives, you know, in their brains and like manifests. And when people forget about them, they die.
Yeah.
And there are gods in American Gods. It's like a hall of like gods that have like been forgotten about and died. The like caveman gods and like caveman folklore heroes that just like died because we forgot about them.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Read American Gods. You'd like it.
Yeah. I just think that – I think Slender Man, if you're looking for an example of like to me, just – I would call Slender Man a Tolpa, like a true representation of what a Tolpa is now.
Okay. I think this kind of definition of Tolpa, I mean, it works for me.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun. Like the idea that like legends like Bigfoot are real just because we collectively materialize them by concentrating on them and thinking about them all the time. That's kind of fun to like
it
think
is.
About and like write about like and stuff. But Tolpas go deeper than that.
Mm-hmm.
Likely due to Supernatural's popularity on social media sites like Tumblr, that led to the online community of people who dedicated themselves to creating Tolpas. They just like, I'm going to make me a Tolpa. Right? These people call the act of creating tulpas tulpamancy. If you recall from our oneiromancy episode, we discussed like the online community of people who are dedicated to lucid dreaming, the oneironauts. And like they use it for all kinds of reasons. Right? If you remember, some people use it for like mental health reasons as a form of self-therapy. Some people use it just to like have sex. And some people use it to like freaking just have an adventure, you know, recreationally, right? The tulpamancy community is kind of similar in that way. And there is overlap with oneironaut communities.
Yeah. Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah. Like most weird internet things, it starts on 4chan and branched out from there. Often things will start off on 4chan just like as a joke or like as ironic and then grow into something that is legitimate. And that's part of why 4chan is kind of dangerous because of the anonymity. There's always the deniability of like, oh, I'm not a real Nazi. It was just a joke, you know?
Yeah.
Whether tulpamancy started as a joke, I cannot be sure. Much of the 4chan content that started this was creepypastas about tulpas. Like it was all this started on a board that was creepypastas about tulpas. But what I can say for certain is that the community of people creating tulpas are very serious about it. And they're often doing it for serious reasons. There are many who use tulpamancy as a way to deal with mental health issues or if they're trying to cope with loneliness, isolation, or severe anxiety. So what the fuck is tulpamancy?
What the fuck is tulpamancy?
To be reductive, but summarize, it is essentially creating an imaginary friend that can serve as another personality within you or another sentient being that you can interact with, like as a peer.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Right now, the main places to go to join or interact with the Tulpa community is the Reddit board r/Tulpa and the website tulpa.info. I'm referencing a video on YouTube called Tulpamancy Myths and Facts, which is a lecture from the 2019 Plural Positivity World Conference. Essentially, it's a conference about plurality or the subculture of people that deliberately or otherwise have bodies inhabited by multiple personalities, spirits, beings, or personas. Tulpamancy is like a deliberate form of plurality.
I think the plural community is something I really struggle to kind of wrap my mind around, to be honest.
It is hard to wrap your mind
around. So it's a hard thing that I'm like, I can't, I don't even have like, I think I need a lot more context to begin to have like an opinion. So I don't really have a lot of opinions about that particular portion of tulpamancy in modern day times.
Yeah.
Okay.
As we talk more about tulpas, hopefully that'll help give you more context. Because I watched the whole 1 hour lecture.
Yeah.
After you went to bed.
I know. I was like out by like 12:30 last
and
night.
I watched the whole fucking lecture.
Okay.
So, and again, this is from 2019. So this is new.
Yeah.
Right. To distinguish tulpas from, say, spirits or demons or angels, the general idea is that they are artificially or deliberately created by someone who is acting as a host. Unlike a spirit or demon, it doesn't exist before it was created by the host, and it doesn't know anything beyond what the host knows. So you can't really perform divination with a tulpa unless you yourself have the ability to like gaze into the future, in which case I don't know if you'd need a tulpa to do that. But you can let the tulpa control your bodies and actions, so you can switch with them and give the tulpa control. It should also be noted that the tulpa is always conscious of the host's actions while the host controls their body, and the host is always conscious of the tulpa of their actions while the tulpa controls their body. So it's not exactly like possession where your personality is like completely overwritten or like you're blacking out and waking up as someone else. You still have shared memories.
And this is something that makes this particular flavor of tulpamancy different from like channeling, because other versions of this you could say is someone being a channel, but when I channel, I don't necessarily remember the conversation. I can remember bits and pieces. It's a bit like if you're driving and you're just kind of like listening to the radio and you have little bits of it come in and out. That's a bit what it's like. So yeah, that's just an aside.
And, you know, I know what this fucking sounds like, okay? When I first heard about this, I knew exactly what this fucking sounded like. I'm sure you know what this sounds like. It sounds like a bunch of people online trying really hard to give themselves dissociative identity disorder. DID.
Yeah.
Which is when somebody exhibits multiple personalities or identities that can take control over them or can switch in response to certain triggers. Like they can't keep track. Basically, their identities are dissociated. They cannot keep track of their personality, and often they'll like switch radically.
And they, yes, and they have certain language like fronting, where they have like certain personalities that are at the front that are kind of driving the car, for lack of a better way to describe that. Mm-hmm. And that's a similar thing that they use when they talk about tulpas. But DID is something that the host cannot control. There's no control over people switching in DID.
Yeah, and sometimes DID is a trauma response. But other times you're simply predisposed to the disorder, or it can come from like, you know, severe drug abuse or other even a TBI, you know, a traumatic brain injury. I should note that it was previously called multiple personality disorder, but that name has been deemed misleading, so they changed it to dissociative identity disorder. It's categorized less by having multiple personalities and more by people having a cycling identity. Usually DID accompanies other personality disorders, PTSD, eating disorders, anxiety disorders. I think it's very important that we recognize DID is a serious disorder and is not tulpomancy. Like they're not the same thing.
And that's, if you're like digging into this and trying to dig into this, what you will hear over and over again is people saying DID is not tulpomancy, but not necessarily understanding why. So be cautious if you're like, I want to look at this. The research is out there, but there's a lot to dig through and a lot of different aspects and parts of this.
Yeah, no connection has been really found between the two. In fact, psychiatrists take special care to ensure that they do not diagnose people with DID if identity shifts can be attributed to drug use, imaginative play in children. So like, children just have like a...
When you're an actor,
Or religious or spiritual practices.
So, and tulpomancy would be,
So if like you as a channel, you're like, this is my spiritual practice, right? They're not going to be like, oh, you have DID because you channel.
I also, can control it. And so that would be something that would be an indication of not being afflicted by it.
Yeah, I would like us all to remember that DID is a disorder. And disorders are diseases are classified as an abnormal state that negatively impacts a person's life or can hurt the people around them. You can totally have symptoms of something like schizophrenia and not actually have schizophrenia because schizophrenia is a disorder. If you like hear voices and see like visual hallucinations, but they don't like negatively affect your life, it's like, oh yes, I hear the voice in my head and it tells me that I'm doing a great job and colors just look so vivid and it helps me paint. You might have a symptom of schizophrenia, but that doesn't mean you have schizophrenia because it's not hurting you, right? It's not hurting the people around you. So keep that in mind. People in the tulpomancy community do not have a disorder because their tulpas do not negatively impact their life and they exhibit full control over them. If they were to lose control or if their tulpas were to lead them toward harm, then you might classify this as a disorder. Anyway, the community largely existed on 4chan, but for some fucking reason, likely because the original creators of the board were like creepypasta guys who decided they didn't want to host their board of people who were like making imaginary friends from their creepy stories. They closed the board. Yeah. Like the Tulpomancy board, they were like, you know what? This is becoming weird.
I think
Is this becoming weird, guys?
Is anyone else?
And like the emo kid who sits like L from Death Note and is like typing Slenderman stories is like, yeah, even I think this is weird.
Gotta go have sex with my tulpa later.
Like. Yeah, so they closed the board. And this caused the board to migrate to where on 4chan? What fandom board do you think they went to?
Bronies.
Yeah, My Little Pony. The My Little Pony board on 4chan. Why? Here is my theory. Like in the lecture that I watched, he was like, I don't know why they went to My Little Pony. It just happened. I'm not really sure why. Here's my fucking theory.
All right, I'm ready for your fucking theory.
My theory is that fringe communities attract other fringe communities.
Yes.
I've done ethnographies on furries and bronies, and like one of the main things I found is that members of these fringe groups crave a sense of belonging, and they generate that sense of belonging within these groups. Mm-hmm. You'll find that inclusion and belonging are critical to furry and brony communities. Often, this inclusion attracts other fringe groups, some fairly harmless, like Tulpamancers, and some quite dangerous, like neo-Nazis. Yes, neo-Nazi furries and neo-Nazi bronies.
They are a thing. And it's a problem.
Yeah, but for the most part, they adhere to the paradox of tolerance within these communities. And the bigots tend to not last long. But because it's so easy to obscure these things, it just makes these bigots obscure themselves better. It's like a whole ongoing process within these communities. And we can have a conversation about how bigots spoil inclusive spaces another time.
I have so many like personal anecdotes about how people can just be the fucking worst, even in the like My Little Pony fandom where it's like, y'all, just fucking watch your cartoons. Just watch your cartoons. That's all you have to do is be excited about the ponies. Yeah. That's it. Some fucking magical ponies. It does not need to be whatever the fuck weird shit they're doing with it, in my opinion, but that's okay.
It's funny because your boyfriend is a brony.
I know. You're dying. I was like, I'm going to say it.
So there is a portion of the Tulpamancy community that is also brony. So there's like a big overlap there. Indeed, brony Tulpamancers will often create pony-like tulpas. One that I read was an article from Vice on Tulpamancy. And the person they were interviewing had three ponies that were just like in his head that could like cycle control. Sometimes they would do this to have sex with them.
Yeah, see, when RJ was talking to me about this, we like sat my boyfriend down and we were like, have you heard of tulpas? And he was like, no. And I was like, good, because if you have one, this is it. For real, this is, I can't, we're not dating anymore.
I mean, I would be fine dating somebody who like had a tulpa, but specifically if they created a tulpa just to like
that is have, a children's have pony to have with, like, sex with them. Yeah, pony, I that's like, no. It. No. Like if you have a tulpa, no. I mean, I'm a fucking psychic. What am I going to say about that?
And
like I have tulpas in my brain.
Yeah, I definitely want to say that in the tulpa community, creating a tulpa exclusively for sexual reasons is considered taboo.
Yeah.
So they're like, you know, actually, let's not do that.
That's like a thing that they're like, this is – it's a lot more wholesome. Like tulpas are really a pretty wholesome thing.
Yeah, it's more wholesome than I thought it would be. For the most part, the tulpa community today is largely doing it for – entertainment or mental health purposes is like the two big ones. One video we watched was by MTV created. They interviewed a Tulpamancer.
Yeah.
And they interviewed somebody with autism who created a tulpa to help with sensory overload.
Like coping mechanisms.
Yeah, and like help control her meltdowns.
Yeah.
If she felt overloaded, she would switch with her tulpa who has like silver fox ears and a foxtail.
But other than that, looks like, yeah.
But other than that, just looks like a normal guy.
Yeah.
And the tulpa would take over for a while she processed whatever was causing her meltdown so that she could like have time to calm down.
Which seems like, honestly, when you're – that's a coping mechanism that they teach you in terms of compartmentalizing. Like when you're in the middle of something and you're like, holy fucking shit, I'm going to lose it right now. There are those self-regulation methods that they teach people. And they might not call it a tulpa and it might not be a boy with, fox ears and fox tail.
It might not be like create an imaginary
– who can just step
a
in.
A thought form ghost that can take over your body.
But they do say like, okay, what are your emotional regulations? How can you ground in this moment? In what ways can you feel safe until you can address what you need to process later, right?
Yeah. So sometimes the tulpa existing within you will help. Like she said that her tulpa would declutter her brain whenever like the sensory overload was too much.
Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't work all the time. It was
It's like this is just a strategy. The tulpa also assists with social isolation, especially when somebody is neurodivergent. It's easy to feel alone when there's nobody like you around you.
Yeah.
Like you feel isolated. Even if you have, other people, it's not the same because it's like, I
well,
am different
always
you
feel
don't understand.
So different.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the tulpa then becomes a personality that shares memories that can confide in issues that other people won't understand.
Yeah.
So that, like social isolation, social anxiety we'll find is a huge reason for people to get tulpas. I think maybe the number one reason.
I would say so, yeah.
And, like, if you think that's crazy or stupid, I'd like to remind you that you probably cried over a volleyball during the movie Castaway.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, you're probably the weird one here.
Also, if you're going to shame people for feeling different because we force them to feel different, like, fuck you. It's just a thing.
Yeah. And, you know, if, like, people who are neurodivergent are developing their own coping strategies that are effective, fucking let them.
And that are safe.
Fucking let them. Don't. Yeah, just fucking let them. Anyway, if you remember Castaway, Tom Hanks' character creates a tulpa out of a volleyball.
Yeah.
It's the first, or I think the second kind, right? Where he puts it into an object and projects it onto an object. The volleyball he names Wilson because it's the brand of the volleyball. And he becomes his companion and confidant during the whole movie, keeping him grounded. It didn't make him insane, just the opposite. It helped keep him sane.
Yeah.
So if you can understand that part of Castaway, you can understand Tulpamancy.
Yeah.
If it genuinely improves like somebody's quality of life and their mental health, then it's not stupid and it's not an illness. So like, yeah.
Yeah.
If it's helping, then fucking let it.
Yeah.
One of the things that, the best therapists I've had have always said, is do what works.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that
works.
Like, what is the thing that's going to help you?
Yeah.
And what are the things that you discover? And those things are the things that you should work, because nobody knows what you need better than you know what you need.
Yeah. So how does one create a tulpa? How does one tulpamancy?
How does one tulpamancy?
Yeah. Well, the community calls it forcing.
I'm so uncomfortable.
You know what? And they acknowledge that the term is dated and uncomfortable.
Okay.
But it goes all the way back to Alexandra David Neal writing about her experiences in Tibet.
Okay.
So it is quite dated. But that is the term. It's hard to kill these terms, right?
I know.
When it becomes part of the community.
I mean, so much of it, though, like, when we're talking about it going, because a lot of these tulpas, people basically, what they're saying is when you create one, a lot of times they have their own personalities, but you can force them into being a certain kind of person. So let's say I'm going to create this thing and then I'm going to force it to be this person and then I'm only going to have sex with it. That's gross.
Yes. And we're going to talk about how, like, existing tulpamancy communities have rejected that notion entirely.
Okay.
But... yeah, forcing is less about forcing your tulpa to act a certain way and more just like forcing them into existence, if that makes sense.
That was not the way that one of those was explained.
Yes.
Actually, like a couple of those videos did not explain it that way.
Yes.
The first one with the person who had autism, she was like, oh, this is my little buddy. And she was like very just open to it. And then like the next video, he was like, oh, this is my plur. And he had like really gross, creepy...
I think that comes from somebody with social skills so low they have to create a tulpa in order to, like, cope.
I guess maybe that's true.
I think that might be the root of that. But I will say that the actual lecture from this conference was very good. It was very informative.
I'm sad I didn't watch it then.
I mean, it was boring as shit. I'm not going to lie. It was just a PowerPoint, and it was like an hour and 15 minutes long. So I watched it so that you didn't have to.
Okay.
But yeah, so – and he explains it that way. Like, that video was very much about the current existing tulpa community. And it's from 2019. The other videos were like 6, 7
they
years
old. Yeah, and they were people in the community.
And he acknowledges in the lecture that like there are some old guides to creating a tulpa that we still have, but we have deemed them outdated and replaced them with newer guides that we feel are better.
Okay.
But yeah, so forcing, still a term. You're forcing them into existence, essentially. You're using a force or a psychic power to make them exist,
mm-hmm.
not just like you're, you know, punching them in the face and be like, do what I say, you know.
That's kind of how they were saying. They call it personality forcing.
Yeah. Yeah. So like the earlier one from like 6 years ago, they talked about personality forcing. And we're going to talk a little bit about that and why it's kind of fallen out of style. Well, here's the thing, though, for creating a tulpa. Everyone's brain is different. And this is the biggest thing that they acknowledge in these guides that I like went through at topo.info. I did so much research so that y'all didn't have to, okay?
Yeah, this is like a whole thing.
So just like how everyone's brain is different, everyone's process for creating a tulpa is going to be different. But there are a few key pieces that exist kind of through all of them. Firstly, meditation. You have to spend time in your own head so that you can learn to very clearly visualize things, like a sensory level. Another step is to visualize or draw what your tulpa looks like so that you have like a picture to look at and like can form what they look like in your head.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. So like they could be like a 7-foot tall Amazon or even just like a floating ball of light. Like doesn't matter as long as you have some kind of form.
Mm-hmm.
Yet another step is the creation of what's called a wonderland, which is a mental space for your tulpa to live and where you can be when your tulpa is in control. It could be a house or it could be like a whole planet.
So when I learned Akashic Records, that was one of the meditations that we did is we like went to our palace where we could go view them. And so then when you're doing the Akashic Records, you have somewhere to go.
You want to know what's crazy? This is where they all fucking intersect. And it's with Jungian psychology and the Persona video game series. Because in the Persona video game series, it's a Persona 5 specifically, it's a heist game, but you're heisting somebody's like cognitive world. You're heisting somebody's existence within the collective unconscious. So the first guy they heist is an abusive gym teacher who's sexually harassing students. And when somebody's ego grows big enough, they create a palace.
Oh.
And so you're heisting their palace. You're taking their treasure that is the source of their toxicity from their palace.
Hmm.
It's really fun. I keep telling you to play Persona 5 just because I think like, you'd like it. Like tarot is like a mechanical component in the game. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. The theosophy and the Jungian psychology and all that kind of intersects with Persona 5. And also people in the Tulpamancy community, I have found by perusing through the boards, are really into the Persona games, which like fucking of course.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so you create this wonderland that your tulpa can live in. And in this wonderland, because you create it, you can teach them about the world. You can teach them what things are, and you can grow their personality. So rather than forcing their personality to be a kind of way, you grow their personality just like you would.
You get to know them.
Yeah, just like you would with a child. And like you start to get to know them, and then they become more three-dimensional. And eventually, you can switch places with the tulpa. And being in reality, like the tulpa is controlling you in reality and you're watching from Wonderland. You can create multiple tulpas, and sometimes even tulpas can propagate and create more tulpas, which sounds kind
they
of...
They fuck it.
It sounds kind of dangerous, but they have to do it with your permission. And of course, you are in control and can erase them if you want. This process could take months or years, but newer guides for how to create tulpas have made this process way more efficient, and people are saying now that they can do a new tulpa in weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The main purpose or the main place tulpamancers communicate these days is Discord and Reddit. When they speak on Discord, tulpas will like communicate with other tulpas like in brackets so that you know that it's a tulpa speaking, that like you're this person's tulpa.
Mm.
So like the personalities are switching so you can have like a three-way conversation between two computers.
Yeah.
You know? The English-speaking community rarely ever meets in person, largely because of the social anxiety aspect of like the people who create these tulpas. It's like why they do it in the first place. There's also communities in Japan and Russia.
Mm.
And like both Japan and Russia have really, really isolating qualities about them. America and Japan are isolating because of capitalism. Like you're so divorced from your labor. You're divorced from identity because of capitalism. In Japan, they have something called hikikomori, which are people who are just like shut-ins. They're urban hermits that just live in, you know, mom's basement, like one room, and they just like never come out, never interact with anybody. And a lot of hikikomori, it's defined as a disorder actually in Japan because they're not contributing to society, but it's kind of fucked up. But a lot of hikikomori are in these tulpamancy communities because of the extreme isolation and loneliness involved with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that capitalism is the big reason for that, like being divorced from like having your whole identity based solely on like what you can produce for a corporation, it divorces you from humanity.
Yeah.
Naturally is alienating. But that can be a whole other conversation another time. While most seem to develop tulpas as a way to cope with social anxiety, isolation, and mental health, others are more interested in the brain hacking component of tulpas. They'll create tulpas to compartmentalize their identity to help them manage their brains more efficiently. So rather than it being necessarily a creative process, it's like a very mechanical process. An example is like creating a tulpa that takes over your body for work, creating a tulpa that takes over your body for play, creating a tulpa that takes over your body for dating, etc. Expert tulpamancers switch regularly with their tulpas, and it's believed to help them grow and become more three-dimensional. Letting the tulpa take control is called possession, obviously. And it's important to remember that the host is always the boss, no matter what. And like, I could see that, especially again, capitalism, right? Where work is so exhausting. Peopling is so exhausting if you're like an introvert. Mm. So by the time you get home, maybe you have a date that night, you're fucking exhausted. You can't go on a date, right? So you have your tulpa switch and your tulpa's been resting. So you switch to your dating tulpa and then you can be, you know, more extroverted again and so on. It's just like brain hacking to compartmentalize your identity. Which is sounds like a very late capitalism thing to do.
Sure.
Elle has no opinions on this. Or too many opinions, perhaps.
I don't think that's how it works. But okay. Like, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I don't know how it works. I just don't think it works like that. And so I can't really have an opinion. Like, I can't refute something that I don't. Like, what would I, like... No, I don't have a tulpa. No, that's not how, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as an ambivert, I can really understand this where it's like, yeah, like some situations I have a lot of energy and some situations I'm really drained, but I also have other responsibilities I have to do. So you have to like compartmentalize your emotional energy in ways and like regulate your, like the emotional energy you have. And it's not like your physical body's energy, right? It's just kind of like your brain energy, your thinking power energy to deal with social situations.
Honestly, like I think I truly got, because I'm an introvert, which people are like, no, you're not. Like, yes, I am an introvert. I definitely need my time to like recharge. I have to have my introverting time. But I feel like I used up my entire life's good graces and emotional energy when I owned the store. I'm not kidding.
That's what I feel like when I was an EMT. I feel like I used up.
That was it. Like everything. I just used it all. And so now I'm like, I cannot imagine like going to work and working all, well, not that I work all day, but like working, right? Like working and getting home from work and being just fucking exhausted and having a date and doing anything but being like, hey, I can't go on the date tonight. Like I cannot imagine doing that. And I theoretically have tulpas. Like I have spirits and shit, you know?
But you didn't...
create a separate part of my personality to date people? Well, no, you're right. Yeah, I didn't do that.
That is kind of weird, but it's... that your spirits necessarily aren't like specifically form function made to like exist to give you energy to do these things.
No, I mean, I can absolutely turn on like energetic universal flow and just fucking go with it. Like I absolutely can do that.
I'm just imagining you.
Would
like,
I?
I'm exhausted today. You know what it's time for? And then you do like the hand signs, energetic, universal, flow.
Well, when you're reading, like when we do psychic fairs and stuff, it's like 6 or 8 hours of solid readings. I've done like 10 hours of solid readings before. And like, you want to talk about some exhausting shit? Like, it's fucking exhausting, but you just turn it off. You just... it doesn't matter because that's not what you're doing. You're reading because there's another part of you that's activated that is pulling stuff from human parts.
That's kind of me when I perform, right? Like when I perform, I end up with a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Right? Even though I'm in a crowd, like I have a lot of energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
So some, especially in the earlier days of tulpamancy, were creating tulpas specifically based off of pop culture characters. I know I mentioned My Little Pony, but I mean, they also would draw from like other, like there was one example where it was like Korra. Somebody created Korra from Legend of Korra as a tulpa, and they would just like take pop culture things because, you know, it's hard to create a personality from nothing when you yourself are devoid of a personality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you're in this personality void, like, creating a new one can be really difficult. So they draw from, like, TV shows, movies, like, that kind of thing to inform them of, like, what a separate personality from your own would be like. So in those days, there were lots of My Little Ponies and lots of Twilight Sparkles specifically. Mm. The guy in the lecture mentioned that, like, there would be, like, chats where, like, 20 Twilight Sparkles would all be talking to each other and, like, all in a chat room. And listen, guys, no hate to the My Little Pony community, to the Tulpamancy community. But if I was in a room of people who were all the exact same personality, I would leave that fucking room either through a conventional exit or by blowing my fucking
brains
out. I was
going to say, I'm probably, yeah. Yeah. There's a reason I'm not attracted to these communities, because that sounds awful. To me.
Yeah. But, you know, predetermined personalities and personalities that have been forced to meet certain templates have kind of fallen out of fashion in the Tulpamancy community. Like, they're still, like, generally accepted because that's where a lot of places start. But what they do with these predetermined personalities is they allow them to organically deviate from those personalities over time. So it's like the template was just a starting place, and then those personalities are allowed to deviate. You can't, like, punch them back into the template.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and deviation is kind of the crux on developing organic tulpas that help you over time. Because as you change and the world around you changes, your tulpa has to change if they're going to be three-dimensional, mm-hmm. right? So they might have started as, like, Twilight Sparkle, but their personality will deviate over time and they'll be different than other Twilight Sparkles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some are interested in tulpas for the magical and spiritual side of things. Obviously, they're much more interested in theosophy and, like, creating a thought form that, like, serves them and will help them achieve enlightenment. All tulpamancers agree that it is important to communicate with your tulpas, though, using your mind voice. The thoughts, your internal monologue.
I am learning so many good words I can use to teach my clients. Yeah. I just say, you know, the voice in your head that sounds like you but is not you.
Yeah, the clinical term is internal monologue.
Internal monologue.
But in Tulpamancy, it's your mind voice. And maintain that communication is what helps you keep control. If you constantly have communication with your Tulpamancies, A, it keeps them alive because you're giving them thoughts.
Yeah.
It helps them develop their personalities so that they can, like, deviate and grow as personalities. And it keeps you in control. Which is critical, obviously.
Yeah.
They call that act narration, where you're narrating back and forth. So maybe that's language you can use too, is like internal narration.
Yeah.
Like an internal dialogue you're having.
Yeah.
You listen until you hear a thought that isn't yours, and then you respond. For many, like, as their tulpas are, like, fledgling, they may only feel an emotion or even just head pressure or get images. And these seemingly aberrant thoughts are evidence that your tulpa exists and that they are trying to communicate. But it needs more growth. And talking to your tulpa helps it grow.
Yeah.
So what happens when tulpas go wrong? I know everybody has been waiting for this, right? Everybody has been waiting for, but what happens if they lose control?
But this sounds so dangerous.
I am legion, for we are many. Send us into the pigs. You know, like, I know you all are waiting for that, but it's really not that dramatic.
Yeah.
I found a few examples, but most of them seem to just be mental health issues that people believe are tulpas or are tulpa related.
Yeah. Tulpa related mental health.
And, like, I'm at r/tulpa here, like, the bottom of the description. I'll just read the community description. Ever wondered what it would be like to have a mental companion who can think and act on their own? That's what a tulpa is. Discuss tulpas, share your experience with having tulpas, and give advice to fellow tulpa creators here. Please read the FAQ before posting. Also, please note that we are not mental health professionals. If you are having issues with your mental health, please get professional help. Do not ask us. So they know that, like, these, like, yes, you can use these as coping mechanisms, but it is no substitute at all for getting professional help. And tulpas are not mental illnesses, so don't think the tulpa community is going to help you with your mental illnesses, right?
Right.
So this is one that I found on the forum. On r/tulpa, the guy who created this post said that he went through a really bad breakup, and he says he developed a tulpa called Shadow Jason. He said in his post that he didn't know anything about tulpas and found the community when he was researching what was wrong with him. Shadow Jason would call him a fat neckbeard and would fill his head with aberrant thoughts and hatred, calling him names and even accidentally having him cuss at his grandmother because Shadow Jason was just filling his head with cuss words about his grandma. He didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
He threatened to create more tulpas to, like, fight Shadow Jason, but Shadow Jason said that he'd kill every single one of them. He'd also threatened to hurt the host. Like, he threatened to hurt him. The poster was concerned that Shadow Jason could actually hurt him and was asking the tulpa community for help. The top-rated post basically said, "Seek professional help. You have depression and self-loathing, and that's manifesting in your mind. Find a therapist instead of asking random people on the internet what to do."
Yeah.
I'm going to have to agree with that one. I'm going to have to agree. Like, yes, you should seek help. You should ask for help. And those people are going to tell you to find a therapist, because the therapist is going to be the one who...
Yeah, because obviously there's a lot of, yeah.
And if your therapist isn't helping you, find a new one. Find a better one, you know?
Is this a good time for me to talk about spirit guides and, like, how this can also happen with that? No?
I just want to talk about a little more about what some of the other posts have said, and then we can talk about spirit
guides.
Okay,
perfect.
So other posts are saying things like, yeah, if you created more tulpas, Shadow Jason would absolutely kick their ass because Shadow Jason isn't a tulpa. He is a
part
disorder.
Of
He's
yeah.
part of you. He's you. So he has just as much control.
Yeah.
Right? So what you need to do is go talk to a therapist.
Get that shit under control. Shadow Jason no longer. Shadow yeah. Jason doesn't have a name anymore.
Yeah, like, he can't hurt you physically, but he can hurt you emotionally to the point where you hurt yourself.
Literally, yeah. And, like, that was one thing when we were reading this. He's like, am I in danger? And I was like, yes, you are absolutely 100%. Like, your life is in danger right now. Like, that's how serious that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some bad takes on here. One person is just like, show Shadow Jason who's boss and just, like, ignore him.
And go to the gym.
And that'll, you know, prove who's boss. And other people are like, if you cannot erase your tulpa, then you do not
it's
have
not
a tulpa.
Tulpa.
It is a mental health issue. Mm-hmm. And, like, I agree with the majority of these people that are saying, like, you know, this is not a tulpa, this is a mental health issue. That's what happens when it goes wrong, though, right? And a lot of times it's not because they intentionally created a tulpa. It's because they had a mental health issue and they believe it's connected to a tulpa manifesting within them.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, now is your time to talk about the spirit guides and this exact same phenomenon with spirit guides.
Yes. So this is absolutely – everything that they're talking about with a tulpa is how I coach people to get in touch with and find their spirit guides, literally. So I'll tell people, okay, go in and meditate. And everyone has spirit guides, so approach – like, getting in contact with your spirit guide is though you already have one and you're just finding them. You're getting to know them. So I tell people to meditate. I tell them to get, like, a specific candle, like a big pillar candle that every time they want to connect with their spirit guides, they light the candle. Mm. Psychologically, it tells your brain,
ritual.
This is what we're doing. Yeah. So it makes that space easier for people to get into. And over time, you need that less and less. But just initially, it's a great way to kind of put yourself in that, oh, this is what I'm doing. Then I'm like, all right, so sit down, draw your spirit guide. If you had a spirit guide, what would your spirit guide look like?
This is, like, the same process.
That's what I'm telling you. It is, and I say, okay, sit down. If you had a spirit guide, what would your spirit guide look like? And people can't draw. Not everyone can draw. I can't fucking draw. So I would, like, write. I'm like, just write little descriptive words. I had people pay me $35 a piece to do this several times. Like, I teach this class to finding spirit guides. This is what I do. So then I'm like, all right, when you have your picture drawn or you know what they look like, if your spirit guide looked like that, what would their name be? What is their personality trait? When they're talking to you, what do they sound like? How does it feel in your body? What does it sound like in your brain? All of those things are exactly how it goes when you're trying to find and connect with your spirit guides and when you're developing those connections. So I think that tulpas are spirit guides and people finding that connection to, like, a divine entity basically that's connected to them, but under a different name. And the same goes for spirit guides. Like, if you don't like them, you just fucking fire them. You can be like, no, you don't get to talk to me like that. Bye. And yeah, you can't do that. It's not a spirit guide. It's straight up, that is not a spirit guide. I have had throughout my career a lot of clients. I had one in January who had very severe mental illness and like had seen several different psychics. She was referred to me from one of my friends, and she, she was like, oh, what do you do when your spirit guides are mean to you? Like, I'll just lay awake at night and my spirit guides are just yelling at me and they're telling me that I'm worthless and they're telling me that I'm awful and they're telling me that I should kill myself.
They're fucking Shadow Jason.
Right. I'm like, those are not spirit guides. And she's like, no, they're spirit guides. I'm like, nope, that's not a spirit guide. And she would go on and she's like, yeah, and you know, I had to go stay in the psychiatric hospital for a couple of weeks and I'm on my meds. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe we should like fine tune our medication then, because you're not having issues with spirit guides. You're having issues with like mental health disorders. And she literally was like keeping a knife under her mattress. And when her spirit guides would get like too intense at night, her spirit guides, I say in quotes, she would like pull out her knife and like stab her mattress at night. And I was like, you don't need a psychic. You need psychiatric help. And literally it got to the point, like she was in crisis, like texting and calling me. And I was like, hey, here's the suicide hotline. Like, you really, really need help. Here's the hotline for like our local, psychiatric unit. Here's, you know, like, why don't you call these numbers and get some real help? And so everything you say with spirit guides, it's literally the same thing as a tulpa, even down to what happens when they get out of control. You get rid of them, you tell them you don't want to talk to them anymore, or like you have serious things that need to be addressed mentally.
Yeah. And I think it should be noted, even from my secular perspective, that like fucking like spiritual leaders, whether they're psychics, whether they're, you know, Christian, or even like people who are in these tulpamancy communities, like you have to do the right thing and refer people to like mental health services.
It's you cannot get one of those clients.
The moment you start perpetuating their delusions to capitalize off of it, you've lost your ethical framework. You are now morally bankrupt.
Yeah.
And you can get bent.
That's a real thing. And like, she had been told that she needed to seek professional help by literally like 10 different psychics, people that I know, that I respect, that I've worked with for a long time. She was just making her rounds and every single one of us was like, ma'am, you need to go to the hospital. And so there are times when that's true. But yeah, if you see someone and you're like, oh, just take a salt bath, when they're very clearly mentally unwell, you have a moral obligation to make sure that they're being taken care of and that they know that they need help. Like, that's not.
And if you don't, believe in psychology, maybe
don't do this work.
Maybe wrong industry. Yeah,
don't do this work.
Maybe wrong industry for you.
Because you cannot do this work well without having some sort of basic understanding and interest in psychology and like wanting to help people from that perspective as well. Because you're getting a lot of mentally unwell people and people in crisis in this work. And you have to know that with all of this, you know?
Yeah. Anyway. Back to tulpamancy. Several studies have been done on tulpamancers, mostly polling to like understand more about them, like from a data perspective. But also psychologists have taken a big interest. The tulpamancy community itself ran a poll on their largest Discord channel. And 96% of respondents said that having a tulpa improved their quality of life overall. In that same poll, 36% said that they have some negative effects at some point. However, keep in mind, this is self-reporting from these tulpamancers.
Right.
In the data set created by these tulpamancers. So, still, if it improves your life, you know what? Fuck it. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. I'm glad that it improved your life. Having other people be happy and not hurting anybody
makes
is something
my world
I will
better.
Always support, no matter how weird it is, you know?
Buy your rocks and be happy with your rocks.
Enjoy your fucking crystals. It doesn't hurt anybody to like have a crystal in your pocket, okay?
Right.
Unless it's radioactive. Other literature I found shows that psychologists agree. If a tulpa improves your condition or your quality of life, then you should do it. Several papers and articles noted that psychiatry could learn a lot from tulpamancy for therapeutic purposes, giving therapists more tools outside of just pharmacological ones. I think there is kind of a problem in the mental health industry where it's just like pills, just like have some pills. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it comes from primary care physicians that aren't really trained in psychology or therapy that are just like, oh, you're depressed. Here's some pills. You know, yeah. And then you just play musical medications and like the side effects like make your quality of life go down and then your depression gets worse and you start spiraling. Right. But these non pharmacological like treatments is what helped me a lot. You know, mm-hmm. I did cognitive behavior therapy to help with like my PTSD and everything.
Yeah.
Like it's the non pharmacological methods that need to happen first and then in tandem with medicating. I'm going to read kind of the ending of an article in Psychology Today called Daring to Hear Voices by Dr. Samuel Paul Vissiere. Vissiere, very French last name. He teaches at McGill University. He says, To sum up. Tulpamancy presents us with a fascinating case study for the embodied and social nature of consciousness and cognition and the emergence of new forms of culture and subjectivity. It also offers an important paradigm for revising our simplistic and limiting understanding of mental illness on the one hand and mental life and personhood on the other. Any private mental experience that departs from our sanitized norm will tend to be self-interpreted as scary or wrong or bad and as the potential marker of mental illness. But it's not always. Given this set of problems, it's important to recognize tulpamancy as a courageous, creative, and mystical backlash to convert the conservatism of our culture just in psychology and like in America into something that helps them, you know, and when he says conservatism, he means like there is only one way to do things rather than having everything be, you know, unique and broad and spectrum based.
Yeah.
So, yeah. If the psychologists are on board, I mean, I'm fucking on board. Like,
yeah.
There was also a study conducted by Oxford University in 2016. It found that most American tulpamancers were white, lived in urban or suburban areas, and were usually like middle class, like upbringing wise. The largest motivator for getting into tulpamancy was social anxiety, like the number one reason. In their poll, which was done earlier and was, you know, like peer reviewed and everything, so it wasn't coming from within the community. Their poll showed that 93.7% of respondents said that having a tulpa made their condition and quality of life better overall, and it led to new sensory experiences. When asked how the tulpamancers explained the existence of tulpas, so this is like their opinion, 8.5% that tulpas had a magical or metaphysical explanation. Mm-hmm. 76% said that it was psychological or neurological, and the rest just listed as other. So largely they're like, I know that this is all in my head.
This is not a real thing.
I know that this is all just psychology. I know it's not real, but it's real to me.
Yeah, but it is a real, yeah.
Right?
It's a coping mechanism.
Yeah. And as far as like them being mostly white and mostly like suburban and mostly middle class, I mean, that just goes to the alienating nature of white supremacy and capitalism. Like, white supremacy does hurt white people. It does, because it destroys culture. Yeah. It is the antithesis of culture itself to say that one specific group is superior to others, because it creates a vacuum of culture that doesn't exist. It says you can only exist one way. There is only one right and one good way to exist. And that way is a sterile and clinical way to exist. And so it creates this like alienation. You have like lots of like self-loathing because you don't have anything to connect you to the people around you other than bigotry. And that is bad and like very isolating and very harmful. And I think that's why these like subcultures that have such a huge focus on inclusion are predominantly white, because they're trying to reject these ideas and these systems and sort of like fight their way out of this vacuum of culture. And it looks cringy and it looks bad, But how do you create culture from nothing? How do you create culture from a black hole of culture? It's hard, and it's not going to look pretty, but it's, you know, going to be an effort, you know? Anyway, that's my take.
I'm not sure I have a philosophical take on this. Tulpamancers and bronies and...
Yeah, at least that's my experience.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Literally, like, I would go to furry nights at the nerd coffee shop I like to go to. And I would just sit there and I'd talk to them and be like, why are you a furry? Is it a lifestyle? Is it a kink? Is it, like, a personality? Like, what is it? And they all kind of had different answers. But everything came down to I didn't belong anywhere. I felt like – and almost all of them had extremely conservative families. Like extremely religiously conservative families, and like white supremacist families. And they were like, I did not belong. And I knew everything my family was doing was wrong, but I had nowhere to go, nowhere to explain it. And I didn't feel like I could escape it. So I created this whole separate sort of persona. Yeah. And this whole new way to exist and like develop a culture out of the, like, dusted scraps of colonization that is white culture, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I would say that idea of feeling othered is a huge motivator for, like, subcultures. So just feeling like you don't belong and feeling like you just want people who are okay with your brand of weird and that they want to support your brand of weird and that that's a really good thing. Yeah, again, have anecdotal things that I'm like, eh.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that people know that, like, what I'm talking about is different than the idea of diaspora. Like, a culture was destroyed, and then they're trying to create it again. This is, your culture is the destruction of culture, and that is a nightmare.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's so weird is, like, inside of those cultures, there are a pretty significant, relevant, recent examples of, like, racism that kind of go throughout, and, like, neo-Nazis are part of these communities. And so it's weird to think about when people, because I would not say my perspective of bronies is necessarily the most inclusive, so much as, like, you can be weird in the way that we are weird and you're allowed that weirdness. Mm-hmm. But, like, other things, and if you deviate from that, or if you deviate into having, like, political opinions and being a person and needing specific things that are not this one weird thing that we do together, those things don't matter and don't exist as much as the one thing that we do together. And mm-hmm. So it's weird to – I don't even know that I could call that culture so much as, like, a part of a culture, because it's not really, like, a fleshed out thing so much as, like, this weird – it's an internet thing that I think we're still in the process of creating, like, language and understanding around. Do you know what I mean by that? Yeah.
Anyway. L.
Yeah.
Now that we're all done talking about tulpas or tulpamancy and, like, online.
What tulpa, a journey. That was a culture. Journey. This episode was a journey.
This is a whole fucking thing. OK, it's a whole fuck. And it's still happening and, like, evolving today.
Yeah. Weird.
And, like, yeah, I did not know how fucking deep this went. All right. I did not know how deep this went.
Is that not how everything is?
That is kind of how these episodes go. It's like, I have no idea how deep this goes, right?
Yeah.
But El, you've got a tulpa, or rather a spirit guide, which you're like,
I have several.
The same
yeah.
things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to elaborate on your spirit guides? You know, I put a little spot in here. El talks about tulpas, which you already did earlier, but if you want to elaborate about yours specifically and your experience with I guess creating/finding them.
Yeah. Okay, so everyone has, like, groups of, like, a bunch, like 100 or so guides that help them in different aspects of things, and they're all part of a divine team. So your divine team is guides, guardians, angels, and loved ones you have on the other side that all work together to help you accomplish what you're trying to accomplish in this lifetime. And so depending on your missions and depending on your life purpose and your soul purpose and the things that you were hoping and wanting to do, you can have different guides that basically control different parts of your life or
question,
that help.
Can you have an infernal team that is trying to thwart you and make your life worse?
I don't believe in that, but yeah. I mean, because, like, To me, divinity and like calling it the divine team does not imply inherent goodness so much as things that are larger than us. Than okay. humans. And so I'm not looking, like, I would not say that all spirit guides are, like, really wonderfully great. That's not what I'm saying by calling it a divine team. So I have my main spirit guide that I call my gatekeeper, who is named Charlie. And I call it a gatekeeper because he keeps the gate between this world and the next. And so when I do all of my readings, I go through Charlie. And so he funnels and kind of filters all of the information that I get. So like when I do medium readings, I'm not talking directly to those spirits. I'm talking to Charlie, who's getting the information from the spirits and basically translating it. So Charlie and I have worked really hard to develop a language to talk into a language between the two of us. That's like a combination of like words, feelings, visuals, that are different ways that he communicates with me. And so I often call myself like a kitchen sink psychic because my gifts are just kind of everything, just depending on how things need to get expressed to me in order for me to express them. So I found Charlie because when I was 18, I went to a shop that still exists in Salt Lake called Dancing Cranes, and I got a reading, and it was, like, right before I went to college.
The old Dancing Cranes. I have opinions about Dancing Cranes, but I will save them.
I went to Dancing Cranes. It was, like, right before I went to college, and I was, like, I don't know the fuck I'm doing. Like, I was having, like, a meltdown, and I just, like, didn't know how to adult, and I went to this reader, and she was, like, oh, you're going to be a professional psychic, and I was, like, no, I'm not going to be a professional psychic. I'm going to be a theater manager. Thank you very much. So some things happened very differently than, yeah. And she was right. And she was like, you know, all of us have spirit guides and you have a gatekeeper and you should just go home and draw a picture of him. Like she literally was like, just go draw a picture of him and then name him and start talking to him. So my guide's name is Charlie and I never went and drew a picture of him because he just kind of showed me what he looked like in my mind's eye. And so he is like a 5'6" white guy. He's got gray hair, a gray mustache. He like looks like a 1920s gentleman. He has like the cane and the boulder cap and the whole thing. So I knew that that's what he looked like. I knew that his name was Charlie. We started developing a relationship, like just a friendship, a working relationship. I'm not dating or sleeping with my spirit guide. To clarify, that is not what I'm saying. We started developing like our friendship and relationship and understanding how to work with each other and how to communicate. I took a internship in Chicago when I was a sophomore in college, and the building that I worked in was extraordinarily haunted. It's still very haunted. RJ was there. RJ can tell you how haunted it was.
Everything is haunted on Stolen Land.
And I, there were a lot of ghosts that started like, that was the summer right before I like left my abuser and the summer that like all of my gifts just kind of started happening really rapidly. So I started seeing ghosts and I actually one day was standing in the lobby waiting for, someone who was coming to tour the theater is like meeting up with someone and they just have this lobby and there's a chair and I like sat in this little rocking chair and I looked up and there's this man standing in the doorway in the hall and it was Charlie. It looked just like Charlie and I was like, oh, that's weird. That guy's dressed like a 1920s guy. Looked down at my phone and I was like, I don't think that person's there. And I looked back up and he was gone. And I was like, okay, Charlie. And so, yeah, like Charlie is the one that I go to for readings and that's specifically what he does with me. But I have a whole team of other guides. I don't necessarily know their names. Their names aren't like the most important thing to me because I don't need to have names to like recognize them and know their energy. And they all just kind of have their own, they mostly like work as a team and talk to me as a team. So if I'm doing like my own meditation or my own work, it sounds kind of like a chorus of people if like everyone was saying the same thing.
Okay. We've been playing Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice. And a lot of times, like you've been saying that the voices that Senua hears in the game are a lot like what your guides sound like.
Yeah, it is.
Like
yeah.
They're all kind of talking at once and sometimes conflicting with each other.
Yeah. So like my my boyfriend and RJ are both like, both played it. My boyfriend played it in VR and they're like, oh, the voices are so intense because when you're going and RJ has
they
it,
fucking
like,
are though.
RJ has it set up in his room. So there's like speak, like surround sound.
You have
speakers.
You have to play Hellblade in surround sound.
Yeah,
you have
so to. I'm playing it in surround sound, and they're, like, just bitching at you. Like, they're just fucking saying the most useless shit all the time. And then sometimes they're like, you're going the wrong way. No, not that way. Yes, that way. Like, it just is so fucking annoying. And that's what my guides sound like. When I'm doing fucking anything, they're like, oh, do you really want to do that? I'm like, oh, do you really want to shut up? Thanks. Like, that's just how I am. So yeah, RJ and my boyfriend were both like pretty creeped out by the voices. And I was like, no, just literally as I'm playing it, I'm like running around and I'm like, just shut the fuck up. Like, that's what I keep saying to them. Is it not?
I mean, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Senua was just like ignoring them.
Yeah. Senua just kind of, she just like lives with them in the background of her mind. But yeah, that's my guides. They'll be like having different opinions or kind of arguing with me, and they'll argue with each other occasionally if people have different thoughts. A lot of times that's not necessarily like angels, but it would be like loved ones or people who are like, I have an opinion about how this should go. And so then they say that.
So instead of a reading at the end of this episode, why don't we talk to Charlie? Can you like Tulpamancy switch? Like with Charlie?
Right here, right now?
Yeah.
Like channel?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I just thought we were gonna like, we talked about this and you said you were gonna do an interview, so I thought that I was just gonna pass along what he says, not that I was gonna channel. Oh, I don't channel Charlie.
Oh, you don't?
No, I don't channel Charlie.
Why not?
Because I don't channel Charlie. Because we don't do that.
Because that's gross.
Oh, I'm sorry. What are your rules with your spirit guides, RJ?
Basically, I think my spirit guides are fucking crackheads, if I were to believe in them. Maybe I'm the actual crackhead.
No, just like channeling is like, you have to be really in like a very specific mind place, and I'm not there today.
Okay, so you've got to like meditate. So it's not like,
no, you don't have to meditate. You just, channeling is really dangerous, because you can come back, and that's like, I don't really channel. If I do channel, it's like a very specific trusted guide that's not Charlie. Charlie and I just don't do that. That's just not how we do things.
So it's not exactly like Tulpamancy where it's just like, okay, switch.
You can, but it's really dangerous, mm-hmm. is what I'm telling you. Like, could I do that right now? Yes. Am I going to do it? No. And there's a difference between those two.
And you also said that, like, when you're channeling, you don't share memories.
Yeah, you don't remember.
It's kind of like, you know, and some of the ways they described it was like, there's an airplane, and you're in the pilot seat, but you have your tulpa in the co-pilot seat. And you can just be like, okay, you can fly.
You're
still sitting right next to them.
Yeah, but.
And you can still switch control back to you.
I have questions about that. So a spirit guide, or like if you're doing true channeling with a spirit, you would get fucked up because they don't have like the same rules about humanity and participating in life. Like, they don't do things the same way that we do. And so that's a good way to like end up into some really weird situations of like calling people and saying weird shit, texting people and saying weird shit, walking into traffic. Like, that's when that happens. So when you channel, you really ought to make sure that you're in a very specific, very safe circumstance, like mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and make sure that all those things are okay. As well as like, I don't think I would feel comfortable channeling in this building. There are too many things in this building that would love the opportunity to like be in my body and work and do stuff that I'm not interested in giving the opportunity to.
This is a bizarre building.
There's a lot of shit in here.
And there's also like this area in general has been a thoroughfare for the homeless in Salt Lake, especially with the current housing crisis. They literally just bulldozed Camp Hope, which was right next to here.
Yeah.
Which is like really sad and infuriating. And like, there was a time when we were here and like, I was like, oh, hey, Elle, avert your eyes because somebody's over here and they're trying to like bathe in like the faucet on the side of the building, you know? And like, I've been there.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, that's so gross, until it's your turn to fucking bathe in a public bathroom sink. Okay. But yeah. So I, if I was a superstitious person that would be freaked out about that kind of thing, I would definitely be freaked out about like channeling spirits in this specific area.
It just
area.
Is. Yeah. There's too many like, because I basically, the way that I would explain it is like, I step to the side and like allow spirits to come in. But yeah, like the opportunity for other things. So I read through Charlie. Like, the reason that I use a guide, the reason that I don't allow spirits and stuff to talk to me directly is because I don't want to be possessed. Because me getting possessed and me getting attached, like the wrong things attached to me, like literally will end my career. And those are things that I don't want to do. So I just make sure that I'm super safe when I do everything.
I just imagine like a ghost standing behind you, and then you open the channel and you're like, all right, I'm going to end this psychic's whole career.
Well, it's not that so much as like, I mean, I guess, you know, it sounds like really weird and funny until you're severely mentally ill and like truly contemplating suicide. And a ghost, a spirit comes to you and says, you don't have to die. You just have to let me take over. And then it becomes really fucking real. That's what happens. That's what happens to a lot of psychics.
I also think that that's a lot of Tulpamancers, where there is like the fucking guy with Shadow Jason, right?
Yeah.
Where he was in like a moment of severe self-loathing. It was probably maybe his first breakup ever, you know? And he sort of was like, okay, I don't have to die. I just have to like
not live like this.
I just have to just not be here. Like, I don't have to just be present in my body. And then, you know, another personality shows up and is like, then I will be.
Yeah.
You know, which like is very real. And it's kind of like the blossom of DID and other like personality disorders,
mm-hmm.
Like with, you know, borderline personality disorder and splitting, where it's like they become a different person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, then let's talk to Charlie in the way you are comfortable talking to Charlie. How about that?
Okay.
That sounds fair. First question for Charlie. Charlie, would you consider yourself a Tulpa? Like, would you consider yourself a being that was made by El? Or would you consider yourself something that existed before El even existed or even had the spark of a thought about you?
I am not a thing that was made. I was not made so much as made into existence or came into existence. I existed long before El, the person, existed, but we've been spirits together. And so we like frequently travel together, and there's no way for her to have made me because she's not capable of making.
Okay. Charlie, do you think it is possible to manufacture a spirit guide or create a spirit guide using your own will rather than any sort of outside energy?
That's a really interesting thought, because if we look at the ways that people use spirit guides and interact with spirit guides, I would say that people can often pick and choose different aspects of spirit guides and honor them. And in a way, when you cut away different parts or undesirable parts of a personality or being, then you are manufacturing that thing to be what you want it to be. So I would say that no, you couldn't create a true spirit guide, but yes, you would be able to cut away different parts of it, basically bastardize it in order to create what you want to interact with.
Okay.
I realize I'm being creepy because I'm switching pronouns and like first place. Sorry, this is how we're doing it.
Okay. Another question for
whoever the fuck is talking.
I'm trying to interview Charlie here.
Okay. I know. Well, he's talking.
I'm interviewing Charlie.
Okay. I'm just telling you what he's saying.
Charlie, do you feel like you are a religious entity, a psychological entity, or something else?
I'm not a religious entity. That would imply that there's religion.
I guess religion, spiritual. Religion or spiritual.
Yes, but it's a combination of the two, and it's the same thing. Like, when you get down to, like, brass tacks of what it is, basically spirituality is a seeking to understand psychological things in a way, in a very abstract way, and therefore the two of them are one and the same, and also I am both of them.
Okay.
I don't know what that means, but that's what he says.
Okay. Charlie, do you believe that spirit guides can go bad? And have you ever thought about being bad?
A true spirit guide could not, but there are a lot of entities and spirits that are maybe not out for the best interest of everyone involved and very egotistical, and they can find and will find and prey on weak people. And most people who have had a spiritual awakening have been through an instance of having a guide or having a spirit with them, lying to them, telling them that they're spirit guides when they're not, and leading them to do negative things, also influencing and picking apart different parts of their ego to impact different things that happen in life. It's really important for you to understand that the want for control doesn't go away just because you don't have a body.
So you have thought about being bad and like seizing control just because of a want for a body?
No,
of a desire?
No, other people, other spirits can.
Okay.
Charlie can incarnate and has incarnated and is fine incarnating or not, and is like not desperate to have a body or to do that. But there are other spirits and spirits that like opposes spirit guides that want those things, but like not Charlie. He also doesn't view it as like a negative thing. It's just kind of it's a thing, but like it becomes negative, or it becomes it negatively impacts things when you're doing anything for any reason other than best good of everyone involved. So the second it becomes, this is what I want, then it's a bad thing.
Okay, final question.
Okay.
Can Twilight Sparkle from My Little Pony be a spirit guide?
Can literal Twilight Sparkle be a spirit guide? No. Can people use Twilight Sparkle as a foil over the top of a spirit guide to make it more relatable and easier to understand and work alongside? Yes.
Okie doke. Well, I think I'll end the interview there. I think we've had some fun questions.
We got to hear my fun little, when my brain breaks, when I'm switching between Charlie talking and Elle talking, and I just go,
Well, that's what the tulpa switching is like, right?
I guess, yeah.
That's what the tulpa switching is like, where it's like, you know, just like take a back seat and I'll talk, and then you take a back seat and I'll talk.
So maybe it is, but that's just how I read. I don't fucking know. You know what? If there's anyone who's listening to this and you're like, I'm creeped out, but I have a theory, let me know. Like, shoot us an email.
And also, like, this is a question for Elle. While the psychologists say that there is a lot psychology can learn from tulpamancy, are there things that spiritualists and like psychics and stuff can learn from tulpamancy?
Well, I think that anything that's psychologically related is something that's of importance to psychic work. Just like inherently, I think that those two things are super connected and very important. I think that there's something to be said for the coping mechanism, and also for like the way that, because there's definitely this kind of how I had said your divine team, and you were like, meh, I reject divine. I don't like that. Fuck that. I don't want that. That's
well,
fine.
No, it was less that like I reject the idea of a divine team, but I'm looking for the dualism of an infernal team.
Right. So people have a tendency to be like, well, I just have to do what my spirit guides say. And it's like, no, fuck that. You're the human. You're the body. You do what you want, and then they can figure it out. Like, I do whatever the fuck I want all the time. And I'm just like, you guys can figure out how to handle that and not bitch at me about it. And I think that that's something about tulpamancy that people in spirituality could really benefit from hearing, and kind of the attitude and the way that they address it. And they're like, it's not that fucking serious. It's like this weird thing that I created in my mind that isn't fucking real, that I can control and create whenever, discreate whenever. And that, I think, is something that would do a lot of spiritualists a lot of good to hear.
Yeah. There was another thing I wanted to bring up about tulpamancy and like spirit guides, or we talked about this last night, where it was like the tulpamancers have their own sort of like language with things like, you know, like fronting and forcing and like their own sort of vernacular. Do you think that a lot of that comes from like language that you have from your community that means the same thing, but they don't quite have the language yet to describe what they're doing because of their like isolated community and isolated purposes they're doing it?
I think it's more of a rejection of the spiritual and religious aspect of it. I'm sure that if we like looked at the communities that are doing this, it's people who are not, who are atheists or people who like rejected.
A large quantity I've seen in like these comments saying that they are atheists.
Yeah. And so I don't think even if they had the language, they would be interested in using it. And I don't think that calling it the same thing is as important as people having the practice that benefits them. And so if to them, like having access and having support and having, you know, like a spirit guide, as someone who basically is just there to help you. And if that comes in the form of this other tulpa that they get to create and they can have access to when they need to, and then they can have a foil, whatever foil, so they can benefit from it, I think that's what's important versus needing to use like the exact language. I just was struggling with the language of it because I was like, I swear to fucking God, you were saying what I fucking do. Like, this is the shit that I do. It's, this is it. And it just was like, we had to like go down all the rabbit holes to like figure that out. So it was more that I was like, especially, is this not what I do?
Especially finding the roots in theosophy.
Right. You know? Like, yeah. So I think that it is the same thing at the end of the day, but I don't think that having access to this language or like me having a conversation with them and educating them about the spiritual side of it would have any impact other than them just offhand rejecting it.
All right. That'll conclude the episode on Tulpamancy. Hit us up on Patreon and Elle will do a reading for you on the show. Patreon.com/Mancy. And if you like the show, please share with your friends. The more support we have, the more episodes we can make. And if you like my writing, you can pick up books at rjwalkerpoet.com. And you can follow me on TikTok. I'm making weird TikToks about fucking Mancy and history, and I'm doing poems and whatever dumb shit that I'm doing at the time. So Mancy Podcast on TikTok.
If you wanted to get a reading from me, you can find me on my Etsy at Laurels of Lux, laurelsoflux.com. You can email me, laurelsoflux@gmail.com. We also have a bunch of social media up. We've got an Instagram, which is at Mancy Pod. And yeah, hit us up on Patreon. Send us love notes. We love love notes. It's great. I like get them in my email. RJ and I are normally like eating somewhere and I'm like, oh my God, we got fan mail. And then we get really excited and we're like, wow, people love us. So, you know, we are entertainers. Tell us, do love us.
Or
give us money.
Tell me that you hate me so that I can internalize it forever.
No, I don't want those. I want the love letters.
Because like fucking, like this always happens to me. Like I like a new video of my poem releases and it's like 2,000 likes, then like 3 dislikes. I'm like, well.
Yeah, and RJ's like, it doesn't fucking matter.
Every dislike counts for 1,000 likes, so.
More dislikes than likes.
Anyway, yeah, the music was provided by, in order of appearance, Hayden Folker, Miyu, and Scott Buck.